Today I talk about our research under the title of Is Linux Kernel Oops Useful or Not? This is a joint work with Hiroshi Yamada and Kenji Kono. First of all, I talk about kernel crashes in operating systems. Operating systems are needed to be highly available because all the applications running on the kernel cause a failure if the kernel causes a kernel crash. That is caused even when the applications are well developed or needed to be highly available. So the high availability of operating systems are necessary for all applications to be nonstop. But unfortunately, the root cause of kernel crashes are difficult to be zero. According to 14 Linux 10 years later, bugs inside Linux are still existing as a matter of fact. And generally, bugs are not always fixed soon, so we need a new method to recover from kernel crashes. Then we focus on a Linux method to recover from kernel crashes, which is called kernel oops. Kernel oops is a Linux behavior to handle detected bugs. These bugs are in kernel null pointed accesses or invalid off-code executions. When kernel causes a kernel oops, a process of the faulty context is queued instead of stopping the entire system. By doing so, Linux first tries to avoid kernel crashes, which is well known as kernel panic. But it seems like non-stopping after error detection is less reliable or dangerous. The reason is shown in this figure. The figure shows a situation where a kernel causes a kernel oops and shared kernel objects are corrupted. In this case, processes can read this corrupted data because the system does not choose to fail stop. So it is non-stopping after error detection is less reliable. But what if the errors are frequently confined in the kernel stack? This figure shows that. In this case, no shared kernel objects are corrupted, so processes does not cause any dangerous situations like file system corruption. And because all the errors are removed completely by killing a faulty process. The point is that killing a faulty process does not require any complex mechanisms or rebooting, which usually lead to large constraints or large trade-offs. And another point is the Linux reliability after kernel oops depends on where errors are confined or errors are propagated. So we focus on error propagation in Linux, and in this work, we introduce a concept of the scope of error propagation. The errors are classified into two types, simply. One is process local, another is kernel global. An example of process local error is shown in this in the left side of this figure, which errors are propagated only within the kernel context of a process. For example, kernel state corruption or data errors in function local data are process local errors. On the other hand, kernel global errors error is shown in the right side of this figure, which errors are propagated to data shared among kernel context. For example, kernel state corruption or errors in global data or heap data are kernel global errors. We analyze error propagation scope in this work. And if errors are process local, by just killing a faulty process, errors can be removed completely, at least in the kernel. These are our goal in this work. The first goal is to analyze Linux behavior to faults. The second goal is to analyze error propagation scope in loops, which I explained before. And the third goal is to estimate the Linux reliability after kernel oops. For example, we examine how frequently Linux can avoid panic correctly. Finally, we summarize the possibility of using kernel oops, killing a faulty process as an error recovery method. This is a list of experimental equipments in this work. Used kernel is Linux 2.6.38, running on VMware Workstation 8. And we used a fault injector to generate faults. It is used by existing work, like Real Firecache, Nukes, and other world. We obtained it from Nukes research website. And the third equipment is a built-in kernel debugger. The name is KDB. We use it to trace error propagation by using breakpoints or single-step mode. Finally, we use six benchmarks as workloads. Next, I explain briefly the fault injector we used in this work. It emulates 15 fault types, which is specific to operating system kernels. It mutates random instruction in the running kernel text. And note that we extended it to imitate some reported bugs in Fortran Linux. For example, we emulate forgetting null pointer check by deleting null pointer check branches. This table shows it shows examples of the injected faults. For example, we emulate forgetting enabling disabled interrupts or missing initialization or off by one, which is well known as typical programming errors. Then take a look at each experiment and result. First, we analyze Linux behavior to faults. In this experiment, we inject a fault and set a breakpoint to the fault instruction which is injected and run every workload in six benchmarks for each fault and simply see if the fault is activated or not, just by seeing if the kernel hits the breakpoint or not. And finally, we see what happens until the workload fails or it is finished. This is the result. We actually injected over 6,000 faults and 887 faults are activated. Not surprisingly, most of the faults do not manifest any failures, but 15% of faults caused oops or panic, which we investigate scope of error propagation. The rest cases are fail silence violation or hang or unexpected termination by VMM is observed. Next, we analyze error propagation scope. In this experiment, we inject a fault causing kernel oops or panic, which I explained in the first experiment, and set a breakpoint to the fault instruction and run a workload, wait until the kernel hits a breakpoint. After the kernel hits a breakpoint, the control is transferred to the kernel debugger, so we can trace all the instructions until the kernel oops or panic. Then we analyze error propagation scope, but we currently examine if stack or heap is corrupted or not. If only stack is corrupted, we remark the error is process local, and if heap is corrupted, if kernel heap is corrupted, we remark the error is kernel global. This is the result. 124 kernel oops and 10 panic are investigated. 73% of errors are process local, and 27 are kernel global. The typical kernel global errors are caused by heap overrun or corrupting, reset, or callback pointers. Finally, we examined the estimated the Linux reliability after kernel oops. In this experiment, we inject a fault, run a workload, confirm kernel oops, and the kernel kills the process. After kernel oops, the control is transferred to the kernel debugger, so we can remove the injective fault by using KDB. That's because we'd like to imitate transient faults by the existing injector. Transient faults are known as the main cause of operating system kernel failures. And next, we run workload in 6 benchmarks for each kernel oops, and simply see what happens until the workload fails or it is finished. This is the result. 589 workloads are investigated. Around 6% of the workloads keep running, even when the errors are kind of global. In that case, workloads used a subsystem unrelated to the propagated errors. About 40% of the workloads stop or do not start. That is caused by deadlock or oops again, or panic, and killing an important process. For example, an example of killing an important process is killing a kernel daemon for a USB device driver. The rest cases, the workloads run incorrectly. To summarize, 99.5% of the workloads run correctly or fail SOP after kernel loops. We found that that's because each context can fail SOP due to deadlock. This figure shows that. This figure shows a situation where a kernel causes a kernel loops and a shared kernel object is corrupted. But before accessing such a shared data, contexts usually need the mutual execution, so usually they hold some locks. So if the context is queued in a critical section, the lock is not released, so processes cannot read such a corrupted data after kernel loops. So Linux shows fail softness even the errors are kind of global in our experiment. There are many related work, but I explain some. The first one is a study of Linux behavior and the errors. And they conducted fault injection experiments as we did, but they show error propagation among subsystems, not error propagation scope. And the second work is Linux faults study. They used a static analyzer to Linux kernels and showed the lifetime and the distribution of bugs in Linux. And the third one is an example of recovery from kernel crashes, reboot-based recovery with application state reserved. But it takes downtime and needs to redesign applications, which is kind of large trade-offs or large constraints. In conclusion, operating systems are needed to be highly available. And we focus on kernel oops, which Linux kills only the faulty process instead of stopping entire system. The point is that any complex mechanisms are not required to kill a faulty process. So it is lightweight method to recover from kernel crashes. And then we conclude kernel oops can be useful as an error recovery as far as our experiments. 99.5% of workloads run correctly or fail SOP after killing a faulty process. That's all. Thank you for listening.
Sorry, again.
I think 75% of the errors that
75%?
Or 75 didn't seem to manifest in any way.
Yeah.
And was your criteria the fact that they don't lead to a kernel loops?
Yeah, yes. But wait.
This is on your G3 slide, right? The 75% number. Maybe not.
Which slide is the number for the G1?
Oh, it's D1
slide. G1.
Right there.
Right.
You said about the 75%? Yes. We just saw the worker can run. Can run or finish.
I just have a question about this slide. Why did you inject 6,738? Why that particular number?
As many as I can.
Could.
Yeah.
Why is that the limit?
Why is that?
Yeah, I'm sure there are lots more errors you could have injected.
Yes. But. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. I show this result. As many as I could, so
okay.
just no reason.
I wonder whether there's a trade-off. I mean, so if you inject too few folds, then you might not observe anything happening. And if you inject too many folds, then you won't be able to measure anything because every workload will immediately crash. So there's some kind of sweet spot in. I was wondering whether 6,738 was the sweet spot or some other number. But it's just how many you could. Okay. Yes.
Thanks for the work. Nice idea how you did the error detection. Since you had quite an interesting view how the error work is in that system, I was wondering if
you could you slow down a little bit?
Yeah, sorry.
Actually, I'm looking for the how we use this result. I'm not sure. I tried to automate this mechanism, but it was hard because I had no idea to trace error propagation where data is written or how data is updated.
I assume there are like taint tracking tools that you actually could have used.
Taint.
But you did it by hand with the
debugger. Yeah, actually, I did by hand.
Yeah. that works. It's a lot of work that way. actually, I had a question about that too, which is, I mean, if you do see that the heap is being modified, you flag that as a kernel global error.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But is that necessarily kernel global? I mean,
yeah,
some processes allocate a little bit of heap space that's just private to them.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, I'm wondering. How we decide it as a process local or kind of global, but it is so complicated. For example, process descriptors the errors in process descriptors are revoked by killing a faulty process, but sometimes the errors are accessed by other processes. So we couldn't decide the errors in process descriptors or process local. But still need to decide the exact tree. Yes, memory leaks are not manifested failures in this experiment because the workload runs in short time. So we couldn't find these failures in this experiment. Yeah, but this is my opinion. But it's okay if the workload can run. We don't need the workloads run forever. Yes, useful type is important for this result, but how do we find such a real bug? I think it's difficult to find or inject these real bugs. So of course, for the injector, it's needed to be improved. It's difficult, I think.
Would it have been possible, instead of using a failure injection methodology like this one, which is kind of random, instead you could have done, take bug fixes in the Linux kernel over the last year? year or something, reintroduce all those bugs and run your study that way, see whether oops is useful or not against that particular scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm actually working for how we can inject such a real bug, but still under working.
Okay. Any last comments? Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you.